Hi, my name is Mariko Matsumoto, and I am here to share today a bit on my recent risk-taking experience at the Child Haven. Can you hear me? In Nepal. I spent 3 months there as an intern volunteer last year. In fact, I just left around this time of the year. I have some pictures on the screen. Doesn't go with my talk. Just enjoy watching. To work at the Child Haven Children's Home was on my bucket list for quite a while. I have known several people who work there, and they share their story with me in the past few years. What I wanted from going there, I was not sure. My children are grown and independent. I took classes to learn languages and other skills. I volunteered at church and other organizations. I have been busy, but something was missing. Did I need to expand myself from a comfortable lifestyle? Yes, that was it. I was getting too comfortable. I also realized that I was turning 65 years old. I was becoming formally a senior citizen. In 15 years, I'll be 80 years old. That is scary. So I decided to go to the orientation session for the Child Haven in Maxville, Ontario. There I met Bonnie Cappuccino, Bonnie Ma, and Fred Cappuccino, Fred Parr. You probably heard about their name. They are the ones who started the Child Haven Homes years ago. They just blew my mind. I felt that it was something I wanted to find more about. I was determined to go, even though it involved risk. I chose Nepal from 7 other locations since I imagined Kathmandu to be secret and beautiful. When I arrived in Kathmandu, I was met by 4 men from the Child Haven. In a rickety van which bounced along a very bumpy road. I remember commenting on how bumpy the ride was, and they kindly smiled. Kathmandu was not a place I imagined. The air was blue with pollution, and the ground was either mud or dust. There was no hot water, so quickly we had to get used to cold shower, which kept us alert. The environment was not what I expected, but people I met there were beyond my expectation. The coordinator of Child Havens were great people. They themselves grew up at the Child Haven, so they were very aware of needs of children and youth. Dhruva and Suraj were men in their mid-20s with college degrees, but decided to dedicate their lives now to the Child Haven. There were 3 interns from Canada when I arrived in addition to the staff. How can I describe Child Haven? It was like a giant family. Imagine having 100 brothers and sisters. They also loved me as a part of their family and called me Didi, dear name for auntie. Men were called Dai. There were 5 to 6 main Didis who cared for parts of children and another 5-6 Didis who did various other duties. Children and youth were all part of the operation. They all helped each other and did what needed to be done. People often asked me what duty I was assigned to there. My answer was that my job consisted of loving them as much as I could in ways I know how. I felt that I received more love than I gave. However, I must say, it was a very energy-expending duty. spending a full day with children and youth would just about exhaust your supply or whatever you've got. You are free to help whatever help is required. We help them with homework, craft project, exercise session, and so on, even with peeling carrots. People I met in Nepal were so giving, although they were owned very little. On one occasion, a man, a driver for Child Haven, and his wife invited us for dinner. They lived in one-room flat with a running water in their room. They invited interns, some youth, and other staff. All 10 of us ate dinner, sitting on their beds and floor. The food was delicious, and we had a wonderful time. Children were a generally happy bunch. You can see in the picture. Their day started at 6 o'clock in the morning and ended around 8:30 at night. There were disagreements, arguments, once dislike like all of us. I think we all learned that we had to get along to live there. I say they are bonded in a very special way. I don't know what part of our modern society makes us very lonely and unhappy sometimes. There at the Child Haven, happy we were, but lonely we were not. I can tell you that after coming back, I have a lot more appreciation for things such as water, food, and life's most basics. I know more clearly the difference between what I need and what I want. I can do with very little indeed. I feel more free to give away things without hesitation and not waste things. My value judgment has changed, giving me a fresh way of looking at things. I think I became a person who cares for this world more. Finally, I have to tell you that I miss them a lot. They are my special children. Maybe I'll go back there someday soon to see how they'll be doing.
I was asked to talk about how did I get involved with Child Haven. It was back in 1970. Fred Cappuccino gave a sermon at the First Toronto Unitarian. At that time, he and Bonnie were running an adoption agency, placing handicapped and older children from India in Canadian homes. I volunteered to help do adoption home studies. It was a fascinating experience. Mel and I were captivated by this dedicated and caring couple. When they began Child Haven in 1985, they needed a professional social worker in order to get registered charitable status in India. They asked me. Not that they ever took my advice on anything. But I knew them both well enough to trust them. Not till 1993 did I visit India, when the Reverend Philip Hewitt persuaded us to go to the IARF Interfaith Congress that was being held in India. Afterwards, with Bonnie, we toured 3 of the children's 10 homes. We were most impressed at the loving and nurturing care these hundreds of children were receiving, and how happy the children were. They shared so much, they didn't complain. Not until 1998 did Mel and I volunteer. The first time for 4 months, and then again a few years later for 3 months. We chose Nepal. We were also part of the team to start a children's home in Tibet, an incredible experience where we lived in a school connected to a Tibetan monastery. The religious head of the monastery was only 4 years old. And their Child Haven also supported 30 orphan seniors. That's people who had no food except what provided by Child Haven. Seniors. You heard from Mariko. There's other volunteers from FIRST, Honey and Hugo. Are they here? They're here, I think. Faye and her family. Diane McLaren. I saw Diane here. Jim Jordan. As well as Scott Branch and Janice Halady. I don't know if they're here. Have I missed anybody? Oh, there they are, there at the back. Did I miss anybody? Jane? Another one? That's about nine of us. I think Child Haven is a very well-run charity, helping over 1,200 homeless children and 130 widows or handicapped women who have a hard time in China. The children are also helped with job training. That's after they finish high school. And they're offered a home base as long as they live. So when they're 30 years old and getting married, they come back to Child Haven. It's their home. Your dollars go a long way with Child Haven. Ask any of us. If you think the Scots are frugal, just meet the cappuccinos. The decisions today all go to Child Haven. This congregation has had a special relationship with this charity, partly because it was founded by Unitarians, partly because of the wonderful caring job they do, and partly because of the nine of us who have volunteered there. With the humility and courage born of our history, we are called as Unitarian Universalists to build beloved communities overseas where the homeless are welcome as blessings and the human family lives whole and reconciled. With this vision in our hearts and minds and pocketbooks, we will now ask the ushers to pass around the offering baskets.
For this morning, I prepared just a brief homily since I haven't been to one of the Child Haven homes. It was more important for you to hear from Mariko and Christine. But I prepared a brief homily entitled Expanded Hearts. The first time I truly stepped outside of my life and came to appreciate how different my individual life was from the lives of others was when I was 10 years old and my mother took me to Mexico City. I was not on a resort or on a beach. Nobody was bringing me drinks with umbrellas. Instead, I was with my mother and her boyfriend at the time, who was Mexican himself, living in the heart of Mexico City in his small apartment, walking the streets of the neighborhoods, immersed in all things amazing and remarkable and troubling about that city. I had never seen poverty, not the way that I saw it there and then. I was amazed that there were people begging by the side of the road who were blind. I was amazed by the men who blew fire by putting gasoline, it seemed to me, in their mouths. And I was blown away by the beauty of that place, the art and the culture, the food, the deep pride that the Mexican people clearly took in their city. The way past and present came together, Diego Rivera, Frida Kahlo, architectural sites and amazing digging places. It just was a rich, beautiful place, kind of like the best poetry you've ever read. And yet it was also exceedingly hard for me to be there as a 10-year-old. I've come to realize that the best kind of travel changes us. This is especially true if we get off the beaten path or when we really interact with the people who live in the place that we are visiting. when we see beyond the limits of our corner of the globe, we see, as I said to the children earlier, both what we have in common with others and the ways in which the differences between us make a difference and truly matter. Life is not the same for all of us. And simultaneously true is that our shared humanity means that we have in common some of the same desires and hopes for our lives. I watched a TED Talk recently by a woman named Anjali Kumar entitled, and I think you guys will love this, My Failed Mission to Find God and What I Found Instead. In it, she talks about preparing to go see John of God, a famous or well-known Brazilian faith healer, and asking many people, people that she was close to, as well as people in her neighborhood, the barista at her local coffee shop, if she could take to that healer some sort of request on their behalf. Much to her surprise, her inbox ended up full of things that people wanted her to ask John of God for, because the people she had told that she was going told others who told others, and next thing she knew, she had hundreds of requests to take to John of God. Requests from strangers, from friends, from family. She goes on to say that all of the requests that she received had three things in common. And she goes on to describe the second commonality in this way. And I quote, virtually everyone, the stranger on the subway, the guy at the coffee shop, the lawyer down the hall, the Jew, the atheist, the Muslim, the devout Catholic, all asked for essentially the same three things. Okay, there were a couple of outliers, and yes, a few people asked for cash. But when I eliminated what were ultimately a handful of anomalies, the similarities were staggering. Almost every single person first asked for good health for themselves and their families. Almost universally, they next asked for happiness. And then love. In that order, health, happiness, love. End quote. The children and the women of Childhaven likely want the same, health, happiness, love. In many ways, their lives couldn't be much more different from ours, and in others, they hope for many of the same underlying things. And so today, we have done our part to try to help those hopes feel not only not unfounded, but perhaps a little more within reach. May we continue to reach out in ways that bring health, happiness, and love to more people on our planet. And may we not forget to extend those hopes for those in our local community in need. And yes, perhaps even for ourselves. So may it be. And amen.